for having me on.
I have to ask you, Gleaves, I've got to imagine many Americans are wondering, is this what the Founding Fathers had in mind?
No, it's not. I think the Founding Fathers were eminent realists. They understood that there would be different factions, different parties, but they also understood they had to work together. And the example I always go back to is the convention that created our Constitution. There were people at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 who had wildly different views of even what a human being was. They couldn't decide whether blacks were even humans worthy of citizenship or not. And that's why you had South Carolina delegates, for example, threatening to walk out of the convention. On the other hand, you had Northern abolitionists who said, no, they are equal. But somehow they were able to put aside their differences. They agreed that sometimes it's necessary to work through those problems so that you could form a more perfect union. And, you know, every generation since has been challenged to form a more perfect union. How do we make this country better? And this generation in Congress needs to do the same.
So what do you think has happened to put these opposing sides of this issue so far apart and so unwilling to bend and to do the horse trading and the bargaining that leads to the compromise?
Well, you know, we've created a new verb in our language. It's called primarying. We primary people out of existence if we don't like them, and if they're not pure enough. And, you know, you can purify yourself. You could even purify your party out of existence if you're not careful. Politics is the art of the possible. It requires compromise. It requires people coming together who say, look, I differ from you, but we can find a way to come to some agreement on some principles. But with the primary system the way it is now, and, you know, the extreme right on the Republican side and the extreme left on the liberal side, the Democratic side, you have people now who are unwilling to talk to each other, and they threaten the existing office holder. We've seen this in congressional district after congressional district. And it has been aggravated by gerrymandering, where we now can micro-target constituents with the powerful analytical tools that we have on the computers that can form these districts that get a district to look very much alike so that people don't have to talk to folks with whom they disagree. This is so different from what was happening after World War II. You know, you had a consensus generation fight in World War II. It didn't matter if you were Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, atheist. When you were in a foxhole with these other folks, you found a way to bond with them, and you had common ground literally right there in the trenches. That generation came home after World War II. They served in Washington as representatives. They took their families to Washington. They had their families, their wives over for dinner. Their kids went to the same schools. People went to the PTA meetings, and all of them were in it together, whether there were R's or D's behind their name. Wow. We've lost that. I mean, today, families don't go to Washington, D.C. They stay back in their home district. The reps are, you know, looking at a pretty safe gerrymandered district in which they can be primaried if they out of existence if they aren't towing a party line.
Gleaves Whitney, as you look at what's being said by all parties, from the president to the leadership of both parties in the House and in the Senate, is there blame to go around equally as far as people saying, I'm not budging. You figure it out, but I'm not budging. And we hear that from everybody, and then you go, well, where's the movement? Is there blame to go around?
I think there's blame to go around, but part of it also are the structural problems, you know, the gerrymandering, the fact that families do not accompany the reps to Washington anymore. Plus you have, you know, the news channels, the cable TV channels that pander to certain points of view, whether it's, you know, Fox for the Republicans or MSNBC for the Democrats. You know, people are just all, you know, hot and bothered about that next soundbite that they can get in, you know, without really thinking about what it requires to sit down and talk. So, yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around. And you know, Edmund Burke gave us a very, very important principle back in the 18th century, and certainly James Madison picked up on the same when he was thinking about the founding of this country and what kind of constitution would work. Both Burke and Madison agreed that representatives have to use sometimes independent judgment. They cannot just be a mirror of the most extreme constituents or the loudest voices back home. They have to be able to go to Washington and with a willingness to serve the common good. How do you find those compromises that will actually work and preserve a level of civility in the process so people can come back another day? It's It's doable. We've done it in our past. We need some history lessons to help these guys do it now.
Well, if it, your piece on the Hauenstein Center website called Is Common Ground Possible makes a point that I want to talk more about. And here is your quote. America has ideologues, but we are not an ideological nation. We are neither overwhelmingly conservative nor predominantly progressive. Where U.S. history actually happens is in the conversation, conflicts, and compromises between the two camps. So is that telling us, Gleaves, we should not fear this conflict?
There will always be conflict. And I'm so glad you read that quotation out of the article, because that does summarize exactly where we are, where we've been in this country since our beginning. You know, you do have any free society is going to have a party of innovation and a party of conservation, and they're going to have to figure out a way to work together. So what I'm trying to do here at the Hauenstein Center is bring liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans together, and speak through their challenges in civil discourse. We have a lot of good historic examples. And people, I think, can make progress. There's some great techniques. I mean, there's the Harvard Negotiation Project. There's the Delphi Method. We know there are techniques that work, but we've got to separate these representatives from the loudest voices back home in their constituencies so that they're not afraid of being primaried.
Give us another history lesson. You talked about the Constitutional Convention and what happened then. Can you give us another good lesson that history could teach us about what needs to happen to move us forward?
Well, let me say certainly that when we don't find common ground, this is when you have Preston Smith caning Charles Sumner on the Senate floor in 1856. I mean, it comes to fisticuffs. And, you know, you've had a lot of examples.
You have a civil war.
Yeah, and then a civil war 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, another good example, I mean, look at how I love the example of right here in Michigan politics. You know, go back 20 years, go back to Michigan in 1992, when we saw that our House would be divided equally 55-55 between Republicans and Democrats. Curtis Hertel and Paul Hillegons, Democrat and Republican, had to deal with that split in the House. And I've talked to both of those gentlemen about that era, and what they did was they decided we're going to go out to dinner, we're going to play cards together, we're going to get our families together, we're going to try to establish a personal relationship so we don't look at each other as enemies, but sometimes as opponents on issues. So right here in Michigan, we have a great example of what can happen when you have that comity. And they ended up being a very, very powerful duo. We went through some dramatic changes in 93 and 94 with bipartisan bills being passed. So that's a great example on the state level. There are lots of examples on the federal level as well.
What do you believe, Gleaves, that historians will say about this episode in America's history, let's say 50 years out?
That's a great question. I'm not real optimistic about the short term, but I do think that I would say this to people in the Tea Party right now. Even if you believe, or people who are following the Tea Party, believe that the goal is good. Yeah, of course we want to get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. The political tactic being used right now will surely benefit President Obama. And I think that that's going to be a large lesson that Republicans are going to have to learn. I think they're going to really get it on the chin in the next election because of what's happening today.
Gleaves Whitney directs the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. It's always great to talk with you, and I'm sure we'll be doing it again soon.
I always look forward to it.